Rob Sternberg was born in Toronto and is currently in the first year of his English MA at Concordia. Let's welcome Rob Sternberg.
Thanks. I'm going to be reading from a new piece. It's presently untitled. Two private school students have skipped out on an Ash Wednesday service, and they're walking in Toronto and talking in a derogatory way about the sexual orientation of some of their teachers. Nick didn't live where I lived, but we began walking that way, north along Bathurst Street. Cars tumbled past as we began our ascent towards St. Clair. Though it was warm, both of us were committed to our dark toques and gloves until Nick took off these accoutrements and cast them to the side of the sidewalk. "I'm too hot," he said. The anxiety from the alleyway had moved to an area of my body not so sensitive as the chest. I felt good now, confident even. Under unzipped jackets, our maroon blazers showed. We had that special disheveled look only privileged kids could own, with our untucked button-up shirts and loosened ties, private school boys in suits. We walked along while cars tumbled upwards and downwards. "Mr. Kerr," I said. "In class today, Mr. Kerr made a kind of example of me. He got so sick of my shirt being untucked that he made me stand up in the back of class in front of everybody, and he literally tucked it in for me, all frantically." "He's a fag," Nick said. "You think so?" "Every St. George's teacher is a fag except for Hutchison, O'Leary, Pengally, and Morgan. Aside from them, they're all fags. I've really thought this through. There's only four teachers in all of St. George's that aren't fags." "Yeah, but can you prove it?" "I hope to God I'll never be able to prove it." I thought about his claim. "What about West?" I said. "Yep." "Glee?" "Yep." "Ackley?" "Yep." "Dunkley?" Nick paused. "Damn, I forgot about Dunkley. So it's five teachers then. But I think Dunkley's a fag." Nick laughed because Dunkley was so clearly not. We both knew that. But Nick's theory was not unwarranted. Our music teacher from grade four had been arrested when we were in grade eight. Apparently he'd...
What'd he do?
Cliffhanger. Surprise, he molested... Apparently, he molested a few kids back in the 60s, and that year they'd all come forward. When the police arrived at his house to make the arrest, they found him in his garage trying to kill himself vis-a-vis the fumes from his idling car. His name was Mr. Hansen, and I remember his smoker's breath, his pockmarked face, and his erratic, cruel behavior. Once he grabbed me by the collar, dragged me halfway across the room for loitering in the wrong line after he'd separated the class into three sections for reasons he probably wasn't entirely clear on himself. And there was Dr. Barlow, the infamous Dr. Barlow, headmaster of the junior school. Each year he would lead the convoy to Norval, a large wooded cabin situated in northern Ontario, where we'd spend 2 nights and 3 days, a whole homeroom of private school boys frolicking in the countryside. In the daytime, we'd conduct geographical surveys, collecting soil samples in Ziploc bags, gathering slow specimens, taking measurements, getting both wet and uncomfortable. We'd eat 3 square meals a day, and at nighttime, after an elaborate outdoor game like Capture the Flag, we'd all be required to shower. Now, for some wildly fantastical, insanely illogical, and perverted reason, Dr. Barlow would sit on a stool inside the shower room, which was a large open space with no door and 2 nozzles for 2 boys at a time. The rest of us would be lined up just outside the shower room, along the wall opposite a row of 6 sinks. But inside, directly beside Dr. Barlow, on a little television dinner table, would be a large jug of shampoo from which he would distribute palm fills of fluorescent green gel to the 2 boys. Yes, this was a very important role for the headmaster of a junior school, an accomplished man with a PhD in education and shampoo distribution. The 2 boys showering, nervous, confused, subservient, would walk up to Dr. Barlow, who had the audacity to hold in his free hand a shower mop, what a sad, ridiculous prop, and stick out one hand for shampoo, while the other adequately covered that very precious, very sacred area. So there we'd stand, shivering from coldness and awkwardness, one hand outstretched while the other shielded our genitals. It bears repeating. Then Dr. Barlow, in a feat of stoic brilliance for a pervert, would utter calmly three words that should only be heard at the mouth of an amusement ride attendant. Two hands, please. These three words would be repeated over and over by our orange-bearded Dr. Barlow during shower time, once for each pair of boys. The funny thing was, I only grasped the insanity of Dr. Barlow's shower pantomime and the outrageousness of his three-word demand by observing the behavior of certain homeroom teachers who also accompanied us to Norvell. I started to realize that these unperverted teachers, feeling guilt by association, would deliberately position themselves in the furthest corner of the Norvell cabin during shower time, pretending to study intently the daily paper or some extremely heterosexual book about espionage. Not only that, but they'd refuse to really look us in the eye for the rest of the evening, and they'd refuse to really watch while Dr. Barlow displayed his juggling virtuosity for his wide-eyed group of shower children with short-term memories. Thank you.